Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello listeners, before we begin, since this is a shorter episode, I wanted to take the opportunity to thank the show's patrons. So, I wanted to shout out Remy, Paul Brown, and JK, who have all recently become patrons over on Patreon. It truly helps so much more than you can know when you become a patron, or even just when you like or comment or share this podcast with anyone who you think might be interested. I want to thank all of you so much for your support, and I hope that you're enjoying all the extra material you have access to now. Hi listeners, I wanted to take a second to tell you about the sponsor of today's episode, Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, restaurant-quality, and dietitian-approved, and it's all ready to go in 2 minutes with minimal meal prep. I've had some fantastic meals like butter chicken and tomato risotto with Factor, and I've got to say I've been extremely impressed with all of them. They genuinely are restaurant quality. You'll get over 35 different options to choose from every week if you try out Factor, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, with pancakes, smoothies, and more, there's over 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and ready to go throughout the day. Factor also works around your schedule. You can order as little or as much as you need each week, and they even let you reschedule deliveries any time of when those unexpected somethings happen to pop up. And to top it all off, Factor is cheaper than ordering takeout, so it really is a smart move to try it out. Get started today and get after your goals. If you're interested in trying Factor, head to factormeals.com/anglo50 and use code anglo50 to get 50% off. That's code anglo50 at factormeals.com/anglo50 to get 50% off.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.
What? I'm your host, Tom Kearns, and welcome to the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, episode 63, Rebuilding and Downfall. Following Cadwalla's death in 688, Sussex seemingly did not regain its independence. As with the early history of Sussex, the kingdom's history post-688 is again one of long stretches of obscurity, occasionally broken by flashes of insight. Thus, the next king of the South Saxons for whom we have any documentary evidence after Cadwalla is Nothelm, and the first evidence we have for him comes from a charter issued in 692, in which he is identified as Rex Sutsax. but in which he also witnesses under the name Nunna. Going forward, I'll call him Nunna, since that seems to have been what he preferred. Whether he succeeded Cadwalla directly or whether he succeeded some otherwise unknown king or kings is a mystery. It seems likely, though, that he became king not long after Cadwalla's death, on account of Nunna's reputedly being a kinsman of King Ina of Wessex. The two seem to have cooperated on at least one occasion in 710, when Nunna supported Ina in his war against King Geraint of Dumnonia. Nunna was not the only king of Sussex in this time, though. In the same charter of 692, which introduces Nunna onto the historical stage, we also meet another king by the name of Wat. This Wat also witnessed other charters in the late 7th century, so exactly who he was is a matter of debate. One theory which circulates is that Wat was the king of a small tribal group within Sussex called the Hestingas, and who lived mostly around what is today Hastings. The main evidence for this claim is that we find several place names beginning with Wat in the area around Hastings today, while these are not found anywhere else in Sussex. Whether this is enough to say that the Hestingas had their own king is a matter of debate. The practice of sub-kingship was fairly widespread in early England, as we've discussed already in this podcast. So it seems quite possible that something like sub-kingship was practiced by the South Saxons, and that the sub-king was probably an heir or an otherwise powerful noble. The evidence for South Saxon politics is sufficiently obscure that we can't really be much more specific about this as of yet. It seems, though, that even if Wat was somehow connected to the Hestingas, he probably also had some important prominent role within South Saxon politics. In addition to shedding light on South Saxon politics, the Charter of 692 also sheds some light on the progressing Christianisation of Sussex. The grant was made by Nunna to his sister Nothgith, who we're told has made a vow to the missionary bishop Wilfrid that she would become a nun and go on pilgrimage. This official embrace of Christianity by the king, who likely had roots in the more Christianised Wessex, seems to obscure the otherwise slow advance of the new religion in Sussex. It was in the 690s that a separate missionary named Cuthman undertook a mission around Steyning, indicating that the population there remained largely pagan. It was also in the 680s or the 690s that a woman by the name of Lewinna or Leofwin, who, according to later tradition, was attempting to preserve her virginity out of religious devotion, was murdered by heathen Saxons for her refusal to marry. These are anecdotal stories, but given that the people of Wight had been ruled by a pagan king as recently as 686, it doesn't seem impossible that parts of Sussex, especially southern Sussex, remained largely pagan into the 690s, despite the attempts of the nobility to stamp out the old religion. Nunna was spearheading such attempts when, in 705, he oversaw the establishment of the bishopric of Selsey, thereby separating the South Saxon Church from the control of the Bishop of Winchester, who had thus far had de facto authority. By creating the bishopric, Nunna was increasing the provision of pastoral care to the South Saxons, something which must have played a large role in the kingdom's eventual Christianisation. The last charter issued by Nunna is dated from 717, although its text incorrectly says that it was dated from 714. By this time, Wat had completely disappeared, presumably he died, to be replaced by another sub-king by the name of Athelstan, along with his wife Athelthryth. Like Wat, exactly what Athelstan was king of is unclear, but it would seem to lend further support to the idea that the South Saxons had some kind of system of sub-kingship in place by the late 7th and early 8th centuries. After 717, things again subside into relative darkness. By 722, the alliance between Sussex and Wessex had seemingly come to an end, since in that year the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle reports that Ina invaded the kingdom of the South Saxons. The reason why may be suggested by the outcome of Ina's second invasion of Sussex in 725. in which he killed a West Saxon exile named Ealdbert. Ealdbert had allegedly fled into the Weald, and like Cadwalla before him, probably was seeking to raise an army to invade Wessex. The invasion of Sussex likely suggests that Ealdbert found a not unreceptive audience among the South Saxons, a fact which likely indicates that Nunna had died by 725. The next known king of Sussex was Athelbert, who we know was king by 733, because his sole surviving charter is witnessed by Bishop Ceofrith of Selsey, who we know became bishop in that year. It is speculated that Athelbert may have been the son or the grandson of King Athelstan, who witnessed Nunna's 717 charter. With Nunna's death, then, it seems that Athelbert became king and sought to break away from Wessex. This may indicate that the sub-kings of Sussex were indeed South Saxon nobles, who resented the imposed West Saxon domination. It seems likely, then, that they would lend support to a man like Ealdbert, who may have been seeking to overthrow Ina. In the end, Ealdbert failed, but Ina abdicated in 726 anyway, leaving Wessex under the control of the young men, who seem to have brought about a period of instability, which eventually resulted in Wessex coming under the overlordship of Athelbald of Mercia. From here, things go quiet again until the late 760s, when some more charters survive referring to a multitude of kings of Sussex, among them Ealdwulf, Alfwald, Oslac and Osmond. What exactly was going on here isn't very clear, but it seems like the confederation of peoples which made up Sussex was under some strain at this time, and the system of sub-kings was seemingly playing itself out to a somewhat absurd degree. This whole mess was seemingly ended in 771, when Offa of Mercia made his decisive intervention into Sussex. In that year, he conquered the Hestingas, invading their territory from his stronghold in Kent, and by 772, he had conquered the entire kingdom. In that year, he asserted dominance by retroactively confirming charters issued by Athelbert and Osmond, before personally granting land in Sussex. In these personal grants, Alfwald, Oslac and Osmond witness as ducks, ealdmen, along with a new ealdman by the name of Oswald, who seemingly owed his position to Offa. Offa's direct rule of Sussex was mostly uninterrupted until his death in 792. The fates of the kings turned ealdmen during this time is unclear. Sussex probably regained its independence following the collapse of the Mercian supremacy. Coenwulf, Ceolwulf and Beornwulf all seem to have been more concerned with subduing the Welsh and maintaining control over other parts of England than with reconquering Sussex. Who the kings of Sussex were at this time, if there were any kings, is unclear. All that is known is that by 825, following the West Saxon victory at Ellendun, the South Saxons were one of the people who pledged their loyalty to Egbert of Wessex, effectively then becoming incorporated into an expanded West Saxon sphere of influence. The largely coastal kingdom of Sussex from henceforth suffered heavily from Norse raiding, probably a fact that contributed to the lack of much documentary evidence from the kingdom. And when Alfred proclaimed his kingdom of the Anglo-Saxons, Sussex was de facto included within his new kingdom, having lost all independence. Sussex is certainly one of the more obscure kingdoms that we've looked at. Its whole history relies on flashes of light in the darkness, which can at best give us only snapshots of its history. From this we can weave something of a narrative, even if it's not much of one. We see the early expansion of the kingdom from Saxon settlers in the western fringes of Kent to its tumultuous conversion and its oppression by Cadwalla. From here we see a story of political intrigue and opportunism set against a backdrop of larger powers vying for dominance that Sussex could never hope to achieve. In the end, Sussex is not one of the more consequential of the early English kingdoms, but its story is nevertheless an intriguing one. It's sometimes easy to lose sight of smaller players like this in history, especially when they're not well served by written evidence. But for all the Mercias and the Wessexes, there may have been many Sussexes, smaller communities fighting to survive in a world that, but for a miracle, would inevitably swallow them up. Theirs are rarely glamorous stories, but they nevertheless are worth telling, because in the end, Sussex was somebody's home, and its memory still has meaning for some today, and they are as worthy of knowing about their history as is anyone else. So while Sussex was not one of the big players, it was nevertheless an important place for its people, and thus it is worthy of a place in the tapestry that we call England. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. Once again, I've been your host, Tom Kearns, and I hope you'll join me again next time. Hello, everyone. My name is Tom Kearns, and I host the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, where I cover the history and culture of England from the departure of the Romans in the 5th century to the Norman conquest in 1066. So far, we've surveyed the collapse of Roman rule in Britain, the migration of the Anglo-Saxons, and the history of Northumbria from its beginnings in the mists of legend to its destruction at the hands of Viking raiders in the 9th century. I hope you'll come and give it a go.